This month is Ethan Long from Rockaway Brewing Company in the lovely borough of Queens. He's going to tell us all about the brewery and what he brews.
Thank you for having me tonight. As Felice pointed out, I'm Ethan Long from Rockaway Brewing Company. Little back history, this is our first year of being in production as a brewery. Last June, I guess, is the date we finally rolled the beer out after being finally working up to getting our licenses last April. Hopefully, we'll have a little celebration in another month as our as our 1 year kind of like being in production. We've been building the brewery before that, of course. My background is basically I'm a home brewer, as all of you can relate to. I got my introduction into brewing back in the 90s in a fateful day back in Madison, Wisconsin. I had a science teacher who was food science. As I came in, it's a big auditorium class. I'm like excited to have science. We had this British guy. He said, two things for your final. One could be the Digby dinner. B is your own homebrew. And that kind of opened my eyes
science
to
Science class
in Madison, Wisconsin. So that was kind of my intro to brewing. So when I came back to New York, my wife is a chef, so she had gone to culinary school. So part of our dialogue was in the kitchen. She was in restaurants. Kind of, I was getting overshadowed, so I kind of stopped the food as much. And it was my entrance point back into having that conversation about food and kind of subtleties of flavor. So I homebrewed for a long time with her, kind of gave it up here and there, and then having purchased a bungalow out in Far Rockaway, I met Marcus, who's my brewing partner, and our families together. Marcus was kind of a food person, so he and my wife kind of had that conversation going. Other thing about me is I'm a sculptor, so I like to build and design and do furniture, so I'm always designing. So we were, as two families, kind of always doing projects that entertain food and building. So Marcus and I started brewing and canning and hunting, and after a couple of years of that, hanging out at the beach, brewing on the back of the bungalows, taking the kids to the beach and come back and brew all night, we were probably drunk and we said, you know, we really should think about a brewery. I said, nah, let's just keep home brewing. We took a road trip cross country. I actually took my family across and then up the coast of California. Both of us being from California, I met Marcus. They had flown out. We're hanging out in the Bay Area. We got together, started driving up the West Coast. And of course, everywhere you go, there's beer made locally. So you hit Portland, there's like, you know, 40, 50, 60 breweries. You hit little places, and you're like, God, it would be really nice to be back in New York and have that. It's like, okay, so that was kind of the seed was planted more. We finished our road trip. We were back at the beach. And we decided, okay, New York needs more breweries, more than just a handful. So that was kind of our entrance point. Of course, we don't have the financial capital to throw down and become a larger production. So our entrance point was a two-barrel system. So we took our half-barrel system that we were using at the beach and kept brewing on that frantically and started looking around. And we came across a couple guys out in Oregon who had purchased a two-barrel system, put their order in. 6 months, 7 months later, it all arrived at his garage, and his partner backed out. So I found him on Pro Brewer immediately with him finding it to shipping. It was a two-week period to actually get us the equipment. Of course, we were like, wow, we have a new system. Then we learned, wow, you need all the other stuff that goes with it. We were trying to debate what size to apply for our license with. Was it going to be a two-barrel? Were we going to take another year and kind of raise some money to get a 10-barrel system or a 5-barrel system? But the two-barrel system for us kind of made sense as a nano brew, as a good entrance into just being present on the scene. We built that for a good 6-7 months, and as the licenses came together, we've been brewing since last year our ESB, which is an English style ale, extra special bitter, which I brought tonight as one of the beers you guys are welcome to start passing around. For the winter, the other beer I'm pretty happy with was a stout called Black Gold. It's a rich and chocolatey dry stout, more of an Irish stout. 5.5 ABV.
ESB?
The ESB is 6.3%, and that's what she's pouring now. That's our English style. You know,
stout.
And our stout is the other compliment we brought tonight. There's a little diacetyl in this one. I always say every ESB will have a little bit. It depends on your tolerance. This one will warm up. You'll probably find a little bit in it. Less, the batch after this had a little less. We actually changed the yeast out after this into the next batch. But it still gives you a kind of representation of the malt flavor. Kind of has a malty backbone, kind of a lower hop, went lower on the hops and more on the malts. It's Pearl, Cascade, and Mount Hood. And then on the malt front, it's a Turo base with a Victory in Vienna. It's a little bit Pearl on the bittering end, Cascade to kind of go both ways, and then the Mount Hood at the end, a kind of subtle finish. So it's meant to kind of not kind of be overwhelming on the hops, more of that kind of a malty background.
Are these your recipes?
Marcus and I work in tandem. I find ESB, I tend to be more on the recipe front, but it's always a collaborative process. I do a lot of the recipe design. We just did a Scottish ale, which I'll give Marcus the credit for. That was his baby that we...
So you're kind of like Lennon and McCart.
Even when he does the recipes, then it comes back to me to kind of scale up and tweak and kind of get into the form. There's always that bounce back between his tastes and my tastes. Get a good reaction. Yeah, thank you. We're in Long Island City. You know the Pepsi sign that's on the East River? So right behind the Pepsi sign and all the new condos that are going up is a old meatpacking plant. They made bacon there for a number of years. Our landlord had carved out a section that we were able to take over. It came with big refrigerator doors and terracotta sloped floors with floor drains. So ideal to be able to move right in. It's not a huge space that we could just spread out in and set up in.
So Alex keeps describing your space as the size of the closet. How big is it?
It's about 1,000 feet. We have a little front space right off the street that we do growlers out of, which is kind of, you step in off the street and it's probably...
So you do growlers?
We do growlers on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. So we have a front little growler space that you kind of step into, and then there's a big sliding door that lets you peek into the brew house. And then there's another door that goes to what used to be called the washout room for the pigs. We had the old track coming in, so that's the keg washing room.
And any plans for like a smoker here?
Well, there is, in part of the building, there is the old smokers. You can still smell it in there. We actually, for the Scottish, one of our new neighbors is John Brown Smokehouse over in Long Island City. So Marcus would go over there, and we were getting some of the smoked chips from his stuff for the Scottish. So we don't have a tasting room yet. We'd like to have a license for the tasting room. So we have our brewer's retail for the growlers. We actually started doing the hard hat special with all the building going across the street. There's this Friday, there's the hordes of hard hats coming by. So we have a little 32-ounce that we do on a special.
Love it.
For the hard hat special. So
you're like... part of the neighborhood.
Uh-huh. No, it's one thing that's been amazing is the kind of sense of place, like Queens, and even, all of New York has really kind of like embraced the brewing scene, but even like Long Island City or being out in the Rockaways in the summer with our vendors out there like Rockaway Taco and Caracas, who's here in Williamsburg. There's been a Sunday I'll be working in the brew house and I hear someone knocking at the door, and I open the door and there's a guy standing there with his growler, and I'm like, I saw your light on. So there's all these new condos. I'm like, oh, great. Who's watching this these days? We're just, kegs and growlers. I really would like to have a can for the summer, but it's probably not going to happen immediately just because of scale of how many cans you need. So I'm kind of trying to traverse how we facilitate that. I know with our vendors on the boardwalk, a lot of them got wiped out, and they're not going to have the same system to serve. So I was trying to like figure out how to get into it. Still may happen, but I don't think it's going to happen by the beginning of the summer. A series of Queens places you can get, some Brooklyn, a few Manhattan, So like in Manhattan, we have Jimmy's 43. There's, you know, Proletariat and Pony Bar and a few other places, a couple growler places.
You got to have a direct line to Alewife, right?
We do. Alewife, it was funny. Patrick put us up and then was down and it was up. And he said, he had come over to the brewery and he said, just bring me a keg every week. And then it was off for a week. And I'm like, Patrick, what happened? He's like, I said, bring me a keg every week. So that was my fault. So Alewife has us. In our neighborhood, there's John Brown Smokehouse right on 44th. And then Alibar.
What's that?
John Brown is on 44th between just up from Vernon and 11th. And he actually has a really nice set. He has a really good barbecue and a really nice beer selection. Yeah, so ESB has kind of been our lead beer that we've brewed consistently, and then we actually now have a, I call it, it was my IPA recipe that we put out last week. I've kind of titled it our old school IPA, just in the sense that part of our philosophy is not quite being that West Coast, like in your face with hops. Still has five hops in it, but they're kind of drawn out and more subtle. So by today's standards, I probably should call it a pale ale, which I still kind of put it out there as an IPA, its name, an old school IPA, to give deference to the point that it's not hitting you hard with the hops. So.
And at this point, do you have any ambitions for growth? Or
we're like, you know, a nano brew with two barrels, and we brew our asses off. We want to have a bigger system, just because for the same amount of work. It doesn't matter if you're brewing at two barrels or 30 barrels, the brew day is almost the same. I mean, obviously there's heavier lifting, but for the most part, the brew process is...
Hopefully you won't be lifting.
Yeah, exactly.
How often do you brew?
Right now we are doing a three-day brew week. We do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So today was a brew day. We did a stout today, one last stout. Mainly like Vinegar Hill, which is in Dumbo. We do a nitro stout for them, and they paired it up with their oysters. Part of the design was to... The stout was partially designed with them in mind, not exclusively, but we do a run of a nitro stout for them. Well, part of the reason I can be in Long Island City and have the brew house where it is that my other business that I've had in Long Island City is set design and fabrication. So we fabricate, so I have a big shop space. So if you see our tap handle, I can put that on the CNC router. I can build, I can run back and forth and use all the equipment to build. But that's also why our landlord was like, okay, I already rent a big enough space that I could be there. And it allows me to be from one office. I have a little path. I go from my office out the back door and into the brewery and back. It's like a 30-second walk back and forth. So some employees on one side, they're like, well, I was over at the brewery, isn't it? And then I'm at the brewery, they can text me and say, hey, you know, I got a question. Where do you leave the certain thermometer? And I can be right over, and I'm back and forth all day. So we wear every hat in the brewery. Marcus wears, you know, three, I wear three. We now have a full-time brewer. He's there, he can report to me daily, like, okay, gravities are good, the yeasts are good, the cleaning cycle is, you know, it's kind of gelling on that front, so we can now start to ramp up our production. From 3 days, we'll probably head into a double brew day on a Monday as we order some more fermenters. So we had kind of gone up to a four-day cycle about a month ago and realized it was better to keep it slightly less, even though it's nice to make more beer. Margins become too close. If you have any hiccups, you don't force everything out. So we're back down to a three-day brew cycle at the moment. And then, obviously, then we have to deliver kegs on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
You guys are self-distributing?
We're self-distributing for now. One of our biggest points has been about making beer in New York City. That's kind of been local beer. I think eventually, obviously, all stories change, but our point now is, you know, people need to kind of test a beer made locally or close by tastes different than when we're getting beers from California. I mean, there's something lost in filtering and pasteurization to ship it across the country. I mean, we delivered kegs this week that were just kegged them up. They went out the door right to, like, certain vendors, and there's no waiting. I mean, beer is a living organism, and there's certain things that are in beer that you forget that is there until you're actually drinking a beer that is fresh. For us, that's been a big thing. Obviously, as you get in scale, it's harder to keep that going because you have to make volume and get it out there and it sits places. Doesn't mean it's not all fresh, because we're only doing such small batches. We have to keep it going out the door immediately. If we don't line up enough bars to take it, our walk-in cooler backs up, which is usually not a problem because as soon as you make a few phone calls, then the walk-in cooler gets small, and then you risk disappointing all those people who are like, can we get a beer? And it's like, can you wait till next week? Kind of keeping the cycle for us is an interesting challenge.
Do you ever try to sneak in your logo into the sets that you make?
Well, actually, Patrick from Alewife, Patrick actually, the good wife rented Alewife out for a day, and he's like, I put your tap handle front and center.
So
funny part is Marcus is on the other side. He's actually the cameraman. It's rare that he shoots the sets that I work on. He's more of a documentary filmmaker. So one of the questions I often put out to beer people is the predominance of ironic names with beer. I mean, like, you know, some people like to like give it the... So I'm taking my vote. Like, for us, the ESB was its style, its name. There wasn't many of them out there, so for us it was easy enough just to stick with the style. We're starting to kind of get into some names, but I still like to kind of keep the style associated with it and not be just a crazy name. We have four tanks. So we have four tanks to alternate through. So we're doing 12 to 16 barrels a week.
How large are the tanks?
They're two-barrel tanks. So we have a two-barrel brew, four two-barrel fermenters, and then two-barrel brights. So often the cycle is that we take when it comes out of the fermentation, it goes into cold into a primary bright, and we let it drop out for a couple days just as a cold fermentation. After we've harvested the yeast and kind of taken it up and it's transferred, then we let it settle for another 2 days in the primary bright, and then we take it to the second bright for carbonation. No, we actually, I mean, with ESB, ironically, we use an English ale yeast, but for our IPA, and we use the California ale yeast for our ESB. Gone back and forth with it for a long time, and I ended up, it was kind of our twist on the English ale, which instead of having a little bit fruitier ale yeast, we went with the ale yeast that was kind of like California ale yeast, a little cleaner. But then when I started doing the IPA, I found that it wanted to have a little fruitier note to it, so I probably got it twisted up. I have my English ale yeast in the IPA, so. But mostly we use the ale yeast, the 1056, for the stout and the ESB. And then for the Scottish, we were using the English ale yeast and for the IPA. Last summer we did a summer ale, which was kind of a pale ale, which I'll probably redesign for this summer, and a Kolsch style beer. The Kolsch was kind of the thing we ran through for the summer, but didn't really market it. We're not really set up for lagering. That's why I did a Kolsch, being an ale yeast that you can mimic a lagered beer. And so we would put it into the walk-in and let it lager for a month and then pull it out. You know, we were happy with it, but we never really put it into a cycle of production just because at our scale it eats up all the equipment to keep producing. So there is some space that we can grow incrementally, but the real push is to hold back so that we can invest in not just an incremental jump, but to a larger jump, and not string ourselves out, focus on making our small batch really consistent, really spot on at the size we are until we can actually make a jump to like a 15-barrel system or a 20-barrel system. So yeah, I'm in the middle of designing a new beer for summer. It'll probably be...
Barley wine, ice spot.
Really, really helpful crowd.
Surprised you guys aren't saying like a session. I mean, everyone wants to do a session, but like.
Saison's good. That's a good one. You're selling beer at the beach, and also you're selling beer to the beer geek bars in New York City.
Well,
so
right now we're not selling any beer to the bar and to the boardwalk right now, just because.
But you did, and
we will in the summer. Yes.
Yeah. So that's an interesting balance there.
Right.
To try and appeal to.
It was funny because, you know, I had the summer ale partially during the summer, but I also was doing the ESB. But, you know, at the beach, the concessions were typically the Bud Light is the biggest beer for the Rockaways. The Rockaway Peninsula drinks more Budweiser per capita than anywhere else in New York City. And we were putting our ESB on the boardwalk. So first entrance at the beginning of the summer, keg one weekend, and then as some of my vendors were telling me, they're like, the sale of Budweiser on the boardwalk went down and craft beer went up by the end of the summer. So
we
kind of...
Probably like
Well, yeah, but we
could...
Right, but we did find that some of the concessions, there was a heavy local contingency. Yeah, so like the Rockaway Taco tend to have more of the people coming from the Brooklyn, Manhattan crowd, but some of the other Rippers had that too, but like the Caracas and Repas had a real local crowd. I would go to deliver beer in the evening, and there would be a ton of people there that weren't your hipster crowd. And she actually had a really good summit with us that when she came back, she's like, you know, I'm only going to serve you guys in the restaurant. So Caracas here on Grand Street, she didn't even have a draft line. The summer ended. So she started the fall with a jockey box on the counter just to keep serving Rockaway into the fall. So she just went through renovation last week. Last couple, 2 or 3 weeks, they've been renovating. They're trying to put in a tap line. The Arepas Bar on the boardwalk had a really good local following. And we would do stuff out there, and there was a ton of people from Rockaways being like, you didn't just take our name. We like your beer.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.